Welcome to Raising Your Spirits. Our hope is to help you make positive changes by providing guided messages from Spirit. Tuning forks, crystals, and distance healing are how we pass those messages from Spirit to you. Sit back, relax, and enjoy your vibrational growth with us. Your host for this version of Raising Your Spirits, Tony Ginnis.
So welcome today for this another episode of Tuning In with Tony. Keep looking up. What is all that about? I got this roughly about a week ago, and it's just been developing over the last week of how important it is to look up. And we're going to really dive further into this to see what this really means and the significance of why it's important. Today's color, by the way, is purple. And the theme itself is all about faith. It's all about just trusting in something that you have absolutely no evidence that will happen, but you just trust. It's that faith that we have inside that something will happen. I mean, your kids have faith that you're going to raise them as well as you can, as well as they can. We trust so many things over the years. It is essential that somewhere down the road that we realize that sometimes humans can't always be trusted. Not much faith in that sometimes, but there's always something you can have faith in, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. The whole part of all this is, let's start from the very beginning, as far as why it's important to keep looking up. When we look at a physical perspective, we see Tony Robbins in a lot of his presentations. If you look at the way his posture is, it's always up, and it's always straightened out. And one of the things that he said in one of his talks was Harvard did a study for about 100 and some odd people. And what they asked them to do was just simply come in and for 2 minutes, just 2 minutes, do a stance so that their back is straight and they're looking up a little bit. It's almost like the Superman pose. You know, the one where you have your hands at your hips and your back is straight and you have that and you hold it there. And it's almost like yoga. The importance of yoga isn't just the movements and having one leg and one arm on top of each other or whatever. It's to hold it for X amount of minutes. It's the holding that's the power. We're going to talk a little bit about that today too. But they asked these people just to hold that Superman pose for 2 minutes. And that included men, women, anybody. And what they found was after they did the pose, they did a blood sample, and they realized that almost all of them had a 20% increase in testosterone right away in 2 minutes, just by the stance. So there's no meditation, no nothing, just the stance, just the physical stance where you're standing up and you're just have that, you're pretend you're on a building, I guess you could, but even with no visual, just the stance itself when you're looking up, had this remarkable stance. So what they found was even gazing at the moon, you know, in that way, because you got to look up, or gazing at the sky, somehow there's answers there. When we go to the beach, you know, we never just look down at the sand. Think about it. Most of our insight, when I go to the beach anyway, I see this all the time, is I'm looking at the waves. So I'm looking at the horizon. Maybe not so much looking up to the sky, but I'm looking at the horizon, like straight ahead, looking at the waves. And whenever I have any questions or anything that's going on, it just seems like there's answers in that. But if I look down at the sand and, you know, the garbage and all this stuff that sometimes are on the beach, I don't need to get anything. I consider myself pretty connected. I don't get anything when I do that. But as soon as I raise up a little bit and look in the horizon or above, that's when it starts coming. That's when it just starts really coming in. I always ask the question of why everything. I always seem to challenge spirit in many ways because I want things to be real for people. It's one thing to be able to say, well, if you do this and that, this is going to be the result. But I always ask why. Why are we doing this? What is the power in meditation? We know that it's a huge benefit, but what is the big deal about this? So they say that the reason we're getting more when we look at the horizon or above, is that, and I quote, we have been engineered to see past ourselves. We are engineered to see past ourselves. And when we look down, we just see our feet. We see the immediate surroundings, and it doesn't really do anything. So you put yourself, instead of seeing past yourself, you're seeing yourself and whatever's around you. And this suggests that it is you, the body, that is now battling the world. That's kind of a hidden message in there, if you look down. So we're engineered to see past ourselves. But when we look up, it's almost like we seem to get more. We realize that we don't know what it is, but we realize that there's more to us when we look up. Even people that don't really believe in many things, some people will say, please God, make this happen. They look up. It is very interesting that even a blind person that has never seen the light of day, if they were born blind, when there's a goal scored, they always do this, hands up, head up, but they've never seen other people do it. It's just natural to put your hands up and you look up. Very few people, when they're in victory, look down. Have you noticed that? It's in our DNA. It's in our energy, way past our DNA. It's just in all living things. When we look down, Spirit is saying, we then see how far, let's say you're in at a very high altitude, okay? And let's say you're afraid of heights. You're at a high altitude. And one of the first things they say is, don't look down. And the reason being is because when you look down, you see potentially how far you might fall. So it brings in fear. But when we look up, we see how far higher we can go. Huge distinction there. So recently, I had a client, speaking of heights, I had a client recently that was just came back from a Mount Everest excursion. And she said it was an absolutely amazing experience. At one point at base camp, where everybody starts, she looked up at the mountains and the vastness and just see how large everything is. And she says, it made me feel so small, seeing all these huge mountains. And then right when she said that, she said, but then something occurred to me that I was in front of the mountains, and she was getting that the mountains and her are the same thing. There was a very short-term conflict there. I was thinking, what do you mean? Like, look how large you are. Look how small I am. But I says, our energy is not measured by how our physical size grows to. It is what is inside. So when we are looking for mountains outside of us, that is part of the flaw in the way we're doing things, because we should be looking at the mountain inside of us. That's the thing we need to climb, because that is the same energy. It isn't the physical size, because you are a contributing person in all of what's going on. So when you see that, this is how that you're being measured. The journey is not to find the mountain outside of you, but to find the mountain inside of you. It was interesting that this week I came across a poem that sort of really highlighted this. It's one that I think I've used before, not the poem itself, but the author, Ellen Everett. I think she's in Texas. Part of her poem says this: don't consider yourself small when you look up at the stars and the universe. Instead, you are a contributing individual, harmonious with the rest of creation. Sometimes we feel we lost that innocence. We wonder if we have been tainted by the aches and the troubles that coexist being human. Have we lost our enchantment for the simplicities in life? When the night comes, I don't even notice the fireflies anymore, as I did as a child, or look up at the spot in the Big Dipper to try and spot the Big Dipper, or thank the stars for their light? Or do I just simply get out of my car, walk to my apartment, not taking any notice of anything except darkness? When we look down, this is one of the reasons that just energetically we are not designed and engineered to look down and be small. We're engineered to be large, not in size, but in impact. The fact that you are here, you have work to do, you have an impact that you're going to make. The way spirit sees it, it's a huge contribution. Some people don't think that they are contributing very much because they seem to be keep looking down. And if you look at anything that's in our society, you're looking at your computer. A lot of times you're looking down. Think about it. You know, your chair might be a little higher and you're looking down a little bit. You look at your phone and you're looking down. We see people that are crossing the street. And if you look at people that are just waiting for the light to change, all right? As soon as you wait for the light to change, just watch for the people's eyes. Everybody looks down to make sure they're not going to trip over something, want to know where their feet is. But that it didn't used to be like that. And I remember going back, you know, my day where, you know, 30, 40 years ago, everybody had, they were all looking straight forward. And it's just an interesting observation. And I don't know what it means. It's just more of an observation than anything else. But I've noticed that because of our devices, because of the way we're now being conditioned and the women that are being, not women, but the kids that are being conditioned, they're all sort of looking down all the time. And so this is what we want to look at today. The story is told about a woman and a man that met. And as soon as this man looked into the eyes of this woman at a party, he said he just fell in love with her, like almost right away. It was instant. Somehow, there was this attraction that he just couldn't explain. And he was intrigued. And he started going up and talking to her. And he just had an amazing time with this person. They had so much to talk about. And so at one point, and I don't know if it was that party or there was a short time later, the article says, that the man decided, you know, I'm just going to tell her. I'm just going to tell her that she's beautiful because she's always looking at me like, what is with this guy? Why is he, you know? And he says, I'll be honest with you. The first time I laid eyes on you, I just fell in love with you. Now, this woman had a very challenging childhood. From as far back as she could remember, age 3 or 4, she was always told that she was either too fat, too ugly, and no man would ever have you unless you could cook or do things for him. There's nothing. So she had a very poor childhood that way and was always self-conscious, so always covering herself up, even when she's, even with a bathing suit, always had a towel around, didn't want to be exposed and didn't want to be in front of people doing presentations because she always wanted to be in the background, like behind the scenes, never wanted to be exposed and just thought that nobody would ever love her, like her, whatever. But this person just fell in love with this authenticity of this woman, but she didn't accept it. She thought he has an ulterior motive. I don't know what's going on with him. I can't explain it. How could somebody love me? And so based on her history, her past, because she brought all of that forward, all of the pain, all the challenges that she had and whatever lessons that she learned, I don't know what they were, but the article didn't specify. However, where she was at this point in her life, she just didn't accept it. In fact, every time he said it, I really love you. Now, that sounds like a genuine statement, but for this person, it was like almost hurtful. It was almost insulting. Why would somebody patronize me like that? He probably wants something. Like, I don't make a lot of money, she's thinking to herself. And just went through all of the checklist of why somebody would want to be with her because she kept finding flaws in herself. In the end, they separated because after a while, she just couldn't figure it out in her mind, couldn't see it, and she was alone for the rest of her life. because she just kept finding all these faults in herself and who else would have me. And then it was interesting that after a few years, she kept saying, "Where is Mr. Right? There is no Mr. Right." And so I think the lesson in all of that is, instead of finding Mr. or Mrs. Right, maybe you could be right. You could be okay. And then you'll be joined with somebody, because it was right in front of her, this amazing person, and all he wanted to do was take care of her. But she couldn't see it because she was so wrapped up in her own darkness, because she kept looking down at herself. So it's very important when we're looking at these things to look at what this is going to do to you over the long term. I was reading an article. This person has published a few articles, and I think he has a small book out, and it's called NDE. It's a near-death experience. When a person actually dies on an operating table and they're clinically dead for, let's say, 3 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever the time is, then Spirit says your soul does come from the room and you look down at your body. We hear stories like that all the time, where a person is clinically dead and then they come back. Well, this person, when they came back, they had an amazing story. And he, in one of the excerpts that he says, I wrote it all down, what this so-called spirit told him when he was in this altered state. He wasn't in his body at the time. He says he woke up and he was all of a sudden on top of a large building, and the city looked very dark. And in the middle of the city, he saw this egg-shaped structure. It was massive. It was like 4 or 5 stories high, egg shape. He says, "What is that?" And then a voice came to him and says, I'll just read it so that I get every word. He says, "This is the result of choices. All choices have unintended consequences. Some are good, some are not so good. But even if it's good, if you feel you're making a choice, there's always going to be some element of a surprise. Oh, I didn't realize that that choice resulted in this. Many potential futures that I had," he said, "is now waiting for me to make a choice." It's all about making a decision on what you want. And it always has to do with something, whether you are looking up at yourself or looking down at yourself. It says, "Have faith in the grand design, which is essential to preserve life. All the force you'll ever need is found in your art and the ability of letting go. Always live life in celebration," this voice said, "for the individual spirit, for your individual spirit. For no one and no thing can stand before the brilliance of a truly naked soul. Pay more attention to your relationships, your friends, your family, people you love, and be gentle with everyone as I am gentle with you. Because this is a result of a prayer that you made one day in the midnight of your soul." So that really tells us that when we are speaking with Spirit in some way, you know, a lot of times we go through some very difficult times and not sure how to get around it. So whether it's a request or whether it's a prayer or something that you're saying that this is what I really need, you know, there's a guardian angel beside you that hears every word. They can't intervene. They can't interfere. They just have to wait until they're called upon before they can get to whatever you ask them to do. And even if you don't believe it, it doesn't matter. It's still assigned to you, whether your belief is there or not. But if you realize and you can connect to that, realize, okay, if that is the truth, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I want out of life. And you just tell that person or tell that energy and they'll get right to it. There was another study done with Joe Dispenza. I'm not sure if you know him. He's in many of the social medias and so on. But there was one study that really intrigued me. He says, when we look up and our gratitude and body, our whole system changes automatically as we do this. He took 117 people and he asked them to do something for 15 minutes, three times a day. And it was simply to be able to be in a stance, look up, and be grateful for something. And he says he had quite a challenge. Because some people, I don't do that. You know, like they're just in this rut. And these are students. So, you know, if it's a university student and they're, you know, in that 18 to 22, whatever, that age group anyway. And so they're looking at changing their thoughts. What does that mean? I just want you to change your emotion because you want to be able to measure if that's going to do anything to your body. So they took a sample of their blood before they did any of the study. So they had all the records. Then they told them to do this three times a day, 15 minutes, just to be grateful for something. They had to coach some of them. One of them was, I don't know what I'm grateful for. You're in this university, so you have education. There are some people that can't afford to be where you are or can't be where you are. Do you have food in the fridge? Yes. Well, there are people that are not doing that. They don't have food in their fridge. They don't have any place to live. Can you go to the most basic part and just be grateful for something, anything? And what they found was after about 2 months of doing this, they measured their blood again. And they found something very cool. All of them had a 50% increase in their immunity system. These are the things that will fight off bacteria, viruses, and things like that. 50%, that's all they had to do, was be grateful for something for a very short time. The one primary defense, they call it the robust immunoglobulin A, which is a primary defense mechanism for your body. And the way Joe described it as, it's an internal army. It's almost like you have an army inside of you. When you're thinking gratitude, your whole body takes over, and then whatever is in there, any kind of bacteria, you fight it off. You have an incredible amount of sustenance that way. He goes on to say they were continuing that some people haven't had back pain in the beginning, and some even at this early age, which surprised me, you know, like an adolescent with these back issues and other issues, but I guess it happens. And some of them had inflammation. They were going away. Many of them were saying that it's like 80% lower. And some of them said, it's all gone. The pain's gone, not getting headaches anymore. Just by doing this stance of looking up and being grateful for something. What it came down to is thoughts make your health. If you look up, your health increases, gets better. When you look down, your health starts to go down. Now, I know it's a very simplistic conclusion, but they looked at all facets of how this went. And it was all pointing to the same data, that when we look up and we feel grateful for something, and even if you don't do anything and you just look down without even feeling bad, your health starts to decline. Very interesting study. So that's what caught my eye. Another one that I saw was, those of you that are familiar with Esther Hicks, I like following that because sometimes there's some great passages there. And I've listened to them. They have many CDs and books out. But the one that really caught my eye from this subject was this. It says, life is not happening to you. Life is happening from you. In the morning mantra, this is the best way to start your day. They said, try this. I am emanating a signal to all life that it is responding to. As I look up and thank the universe for another day, I decide that today is going to be an amazing day. I feel that I'm going to be intuitive today. I'm going to feel inspired. I'm going to feel connected. I'm going to feel vital. I'm going to feel happy, confident. I feel kind today. I feel loving. I feel that I'm at the top of my game. I feel innovative. I feel energized, inspired. I feel guarded. I feel worthy, deserving, and I feel grateful for all the things, even the ones that didn't come out very well, that it taught me something about my life. So isn't that amazing that when you look at, and in this mantra, you say this every morning, and you're reprogramming all of your trillion cells including the 500,000 new cells you have every day, that the cells are just wondering, okay, what are we doing? These are trainees, in other words. You get 500 million cells, brand new, every day, and they don't know what's going on. But they do as soon as you wake up. Oh, gee, another day of a backache. Oh, I got to go to that crummy job. I got to work with Ralph or whoever. He's such a hard person to work with. And that reprograms, oh, we're having a hard time. Okay. And so they realize that they are now like all the other cells. There's no programming whatsoever. And then people are surprised that how come my life isn't changing for the better? How come that I have to work so hard to make things work? Because there are some things that can't be explained. And this is one thing that Joe talked about. There are some things that we can't explain why. We just look at the data. Okay, we don't care. You know, we're not doing anything. We're just looking at it. But one of the things that came out of this was, why do we look up for answers? That was one of the questions. And there's another medium that I also follow. Her name is Dolores Cannon. Very, very nice lady. Very connected. And she's great. She says in one of her things, there's a reason why when we come into this physical form that we don't remember our past lives. Remember we talked about this in other classes where we come into physical, we have a destiny or a checklist of the various things we want to do in this life, but we have no recollection when we come in what those are, what lessons we had, what hurt we had. It's like it's a completely swiped clean slate. We come in. And so we discover ourselves based on that. And by the time we get to 20, 30, 40 years of age, a lot of those things we're starting to see is starting to now repeat themselves. The relationships that didn't work. Here we go. And then if you, let's say you connect to a psychic or a medium, or you connect to something that teaches you how to meditate, and you start getting answers that way. However way you get your answers, then it starts saying, well, this is what you used to do in another life. It's the same pattern. And so this is one of the reasons why Spirit says we don't come in with any preconceived ideas or what lessons learned. Because here's the thing. When a trauma happens, when we are hurt, when we are duped, when we are told one thing and said another, and we all have been in that situation where we're the one giving and then we're taken advantage of, no matter what it is, two things happen. One is the hurt, is the actual hurt itself. That person hurt me. It hurt my feelings mentally, physically. Maybe there was some physical abuse. Maybe there's some mental, emotional, whatever it was, there's the hurt itself. The second part is the lesson. Well, after that experience, I'm not going to be trusting very many people, or whatever the lesson is. And next time when I see this particular situation, now I'll know what to do. So there's a lesson in there. Spirit says the flaw that most people make is that they culminate the pain with the lesson. It's together. It's like ordering soup in a restaurant, and the soup comes to you, and it has way too much salt. There's way, way too much salt. So you go to taste it, and you go, oh, wow, I can't eat this. It's too salty. This is why they serve those kinds of food with a salt shaker beside. So you have the option whether or not you want more salt in it, let's say. Most times you can taste it and it's fine the way it is, right? But when you put it together, you can't have a really hard time separating it. You know, even any scientist can say with chemistry, it's really hard to desalinate anything. Once the salt is in there and the sugar is in liquid, very difficult to get it out because it's quite a process to do it. But in our energy is the same. We take the hurt. This person hurt me mentally, physically in this. And yes, I did learn a lesson. And so what they're saying in this exercise, they want you to do an exercise, is if something is really bothering you, I mean, it just digs you every time. That thing that happened, the incident, whatever that happened, it comes up and it hits you. And you'll notice that it is hurt, But there's also a lesson in there. Every single trauma, everything has a built-in lesson. They're saying what you need to do is list. And they're not doing it in a lot of detail. It's just more to get your energy to list the hurt. Mental, physical. Don't go into any detail because we don't want you to go down that rabbit hole, right? Just list it. You know, there was a mental hurt there, physical. They hurt my name by telling other people that I was something I'm not. Whatever that was, all the hurt. Then on a separate column, a separate list, what did you learn? And you'll find that that is a little different energy than the hurt. Because the lesson is what spirit wants you to more partake in. How many people here still have their grade 3 notes from school? Why not? Why do you? Yeah, so one person put up their hand. But do you look at those notes? All right, grade 3, maybe grade 4, grade 5, kindergarten, do you keep all those? All right. Now, why is it that we don't do that? Because that was at that time something that was something, a lesson learned. But then as we advanced in all the upper grades, we learned other things that we applied the older lessons to get more sophisticated lessons. Like now I know your arithmetic, you know your alphabets. Now we need to make words. Then we need to make sentences and paragraphs. So we don't go back because it's so basic. But when people are going through hurt, it's amazing how they are repeating those same patterns in hurt. This is how he hurt me. Had one recently, a client where we had told them to try and separate the hurt from the lessons. And then she did that. And I said, try to just put the hurt to one side and just focus on the lessons. And she says, well, what they did was inexcusable and unforgivable. And Tony, you have no idea what they did to me. She says, this is not a question of what they did to you was justified. More than likely, it wasn't. Anything that was done to you that hurt you, regardless whether it was physical, mental, or even a comment that was made, is not justified. So this isn't a contest. This is about taking whatever happened to you and what did you learn? Let's focus more on the lessons and how that could be applied to something in the future. When you start focusing on that, you're starting to look up because the lessons are coming from spirit. And the hurt is when you are looking down, because then you're looking down on yourself at everything that physically, mentally, and emotionally and other happened to you. And then that's like a record player or a recording. It's just again and again. And it's almost like it's abusing you every time you think about it. So we don't want to delve too much into the hurt. We just want to be able to separate it from the lessons. What have I learned? And some people will say, you know, I've been through this so many times, and these are people usually in their advanced years, 80 and above. You know, like that's when the wisdom really kicks in for many. Is as I've learned that it doesn't matter. I don't care how I look. You know, they can take me the way I am. You know, I'm a grandmother, a great grandmother, whatever. What you see is what you get. They don't like it, tough. But they didn't start out that way. But they started to realize that the hurt was constantly bringing them back to a certain dimension, back to a certain energy. And it was always hurtful. So they didn't have to learn anything from, but when they looked at the lessons, what have I learned? How can I apply this to make sure it doesn't happen again or doesn't happen to my family? That's what kicks in. Just to try to take those two and separate them, you might find a much better way to do that. Another study was done, just to go back to the physical stuff as to why we are looking up and how that transcends to health. They took an advanced meditator. This is a person that they didn't really describe where this person was, but they were a master at meditation. They could control their body, control their breathing, control their heart rate. At a very beautiful level, and it could have been one of the monks. In any case, it was advanced. And what they did was they asked this meditator person to go into a zone, and however long it took them, and whenever they were done, if they could get a blood sample or a part of their blood. And they agreed. He says, okay. So after his session, they drew out a little bit of blood, and they started to give it to other people that are sick. And as soon as they put that blood from this meditative person into a sick person, within 24 hours, that person showed amazing results, because the blood is like boosted. It's like putting NOS in your car. It just boosted everything, because the blood can be programmed. And as we saw with Esther Hicks, when you start programming your thoughts, that eventually gets into your bloodstream and gets into every organ, every bone, every cartilage, everything in your body. And that takes a little time to master that. But when they took that very potent blood and just simply injected it into somebody, and they didn't even know where it came from, they showed remarkable improvements in their health. So what does that tell us? It tells us that your thoughts, again, can improve your health by simply looking up, by simply looking at something greater than yourself. But when you start to look at the vocabulary or see and hear the vocabulary of a sick person, that is very different than a person that is not feeling well and perhaps in the same position, but they are just over the top. They said, oh, I'm going to get better. I'm just going to go to the doctor. They're going to tell me what's going on, but I'm going to come up with whatever I need to get well. They take responsibility on their own health. When you have that attitude, it's a far different programming, and your blood takes it, because your blood, of course, is part of water. We all know from Dr. Mansuro that when you program water, there's happiness in there, and just because 70% plus of our body is water that's in our bloodstream. So we can program ourselves, and it's simply all about this looking up concept. So it's phenomenal how something so simple, and people discount it. It's just, it's impossible how something like that could make so much difference in ourselves. But it does. Another study was done from a shaman. These are the people in the Andes. And their belief, when they interviewed them, is that there's only one disease and only one cure in their culture. They're very advanced people, and these are people, of course, that are living 100, 120, 130 years, and they're all very healthy. They only see one disease. And it's all about a certain energy. But when they compared it to North American model of how we look at disease, we have 150,000 diseases with the same amount of protocols and treatments to treat those diseases one at a time. But the shaman looks at it very different. They look at it as illness is only one thing, and they call it an Ani, A-Y-N-I. You could look it up. It's all there. It is a huge story about that. But just to give you sort of an excerpt of what that's about, it's all about balance. You're out of balance with something. That is the disease. When you are fighting something, someone in your head, there's that conflict. You're out of balance. You got to be in balance with your relationships, with your family, kids, diet, with your village. You got to have balance with your ancestors, and have balance and the sustainability to be able to take care of your children's children. In other words, the children that you have, or the nieces or nephews or people that you know, not only them, but their children. When we have that type of sustainability or approach, the energy changes dramatically. Then that is the thing. So what shamans don't do is they don't treat diseases. So it doesn't matter what you have, whether it's laryngitis or whether it's something much more serious or terminal. They create the conditions for optimal spirit and mental and emotional health. So it's like they're creating that condition, and then the disease goes away on its own. And what Spirit said, it's a little bit like playing basketball. And I said, how so? Because if you go to rough terrain, let's say you go where there's a lot of rock and it's all jagged and it's almost like a dump truck just through these huge rocks in a field, and you're going through these huge rocks and you're trying to play basketball. Like, you're tripping over things, you hit the ball on the side of a rock and it just shoots over to one side, and like there's no continuity, it's terrible. So what they're saying, in a sense, is that we're creating a condition, we're removing this terrain into a gymnasium where everything is flat and it's all consistent, everything's balanced, and then you could run without hurting yourself and the ball bounces consistently like it does. So we're creating a gymnasium of health, in other words. And that's one of the first things that people say. How are you feeling? Oh, I'm feeling a little rocky. I'm not doing well today. Whatever their description is, it's very similar to the description of how this terrain could go. And it doesn't matter what sport you're in, whether it's soccer, badminton, it doesn't matter. But I thought basketball was a good one because many people play basketball and they watch it. They know that you have to have level ground for that. And that's the balance, is that everything is level and it's easy. So you're creating that. Now, how do you create that? How do you create this gymnasium? By not fighting everything that's around you. Not fighting the past. Not fighting whatever's happening now. If something is happening, this is one of the things that it's really critical. We're going to get to the meditation in a minute, but Spirit just wants to get this last thing out. When we come in physical form, we know we have a destiny. Okay? That's a given. However, in the point of time that you want something, to the time that it finally comes, there's going to be a lag of time. Now, Spirit doesn't work on time. We know that. But we also know that for something to manifest, there's a process for it to manifest. And as soon as they hear that you're looking for something, want something, I want a new relationship, I want a new house, or I want this because it'll give my kids a beautiful backyard. And, you know, you're creating this platform of health that everything will just flow. There's going to be a lag of time before that happens. Like if you've just been diagnosed with something, now that it's in your physical form, you not only have to look at the balance of why that part of it's out of balance, but now you've got to work even harder to reverse the physical aspect of why that disease or why that diagnosis was the way it was. Because we see people that couldn't see, and because of their belief, they could start seeing again. I was looking at a few examples of that. And some of them seem random. You know, people that have spinal cord injuries in car accidents or motorcycle accidents. And because of their determination, doctors say they would never get out of the hospital. And 8 months later, they are walking out of the hospital. We hear about things like that. But the reason that's happening is because the faith is going to be the lag. Let's say 80% of this belief, you got it nailed. You got it. But there's going to be a lag of 20%. You've heard of the 80-20 rule? And I'm not sure. This applies very, very closely to that. Where 80% of your efforts are going to be now, you're going to be missing this 20% that will actually bring this in. And so that gap is faith. Is undying faith, no matter how many times something comes back as a failure or as a positive or whatever you're getting, I still see myself healthy. I still see it, no matter what happens, no matter what the doctors say. Yes, they have a lot more experience. They've been taught. But Spirit says they've been taught on how the body reacts, what the potential of the body is. They just tell you based on hundreds of thousands or millions of people, when a person gets this disease, this happens. And that might be true. Spirit is not conflicting with that. But they're saying that all it takes is one person not to follow that model, that I'm going to be well, that will change. And that's why some of these things are coming out, because the faith was stronger than what other people are telling them. with that lag, it's that undying faith. It's that always looking up, always looking that there's a, maybe it's tomorrow, maybe we could do this tomorrow. And you find this in third world countries so well, where they have nothing, literally nothing. You name it, they don't got it. You know, you name it, you know, in some places, it's just amazing that they have absolutely nothing. But you talk to these people and they're the kindest, and they're offering you like food, and they have a hard time feeding their 8 kids. Like, it's just incredible. And yet some people will have, you know, freezer loads of food, and they won't share anything. But it's not about that. It's just that they have learned that there's another way to sustain life. And that is to constantly feel like you're going to be something and constantly looking up for those answers. And those answers do come. In this meditation, we're going to be looking at the energy of the sun. We want to be able to activate something. Visualize that you're on the beach or you're in the forest somewhere and you're lying down and you're looking at the sun. Because this is the only time you can without having any damage to your eyes is doing it, you know, in your visual. You're looking at the sun. Just ask yourself, where do I go from here? How do I find something better? And if any of the ones that I've read about feeling better, feeling inspired, feeling that something is going to work, it's you choose your life and you're choosing your health. So choose one that really resonates with you and just say it over and over again. And let's see where we are, okay? I want you to take a deep breath of purple, this beautiful purple color. This is where we're going to instill that faith inside of you, that even though you have absolutely no evidence that something can get better, the faith itself will tie you over until you can make it a reality. Just take a nice deep breath. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Raising Your Spirits. If there is a subject you would like to hear in a future podcast or would like to book a session with Tony, reach out to his Facebook group at Janice Shields Natural Healing Center or group tuning classes with Tony on his online virtual weekly classes. The YouTube channel is Suzanne and Tony 17. That's Suzanne and Tony, all one word and the number 17. And the website is lovehigherself.com. Until next time, namaste.
Hey there. If you like this show, I want you to text someone right now that you think needs to hear this episode. If they are going through a tough time and they need some inspiration, let them know by sending them a link to this podcast. Let me know how it goes to see if it helped them. All the best.